Hello, Chris Foss, bass from Contus.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good, Chris, thank you. This is Mindy Heisel, and I'm the music director and afternoon music host of Perspective, a program here at WVIK Quad Cities NPR. Thank you for taking some time out to chat with me here today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Mindy.
Oh, I love talking to the musicians. I'm telling you, I'm sure listeners would much rather hear you talk about it than listening to me babble on. So this is great. I'm really thrilled because I saw that, there's eight of you in Contus, and you're born in Council Bluffs, Iowa. And I have to tell you, that is a stone's throw away from where I grew up in a very small town in Nebraska. We were just on the other side of the river from you.
Oh, cool. Yeah, well, I was technically, I wasn't born there, but I lived most of my, I think I moved there in kindergarten, so I can say I'm from Council Bluffs, yeah.
So you're Council Bluffs grad and...
Yes, that's exactly true.
So that, that area is so familiar to me having grown up there, and I just thought it was really kind of cool to see somebody that's pretty close to where I grew up that has now made it into a professional music ensemble, is singing all around the world. There's just kind of that totally cool factor that kind of goes into that. So even though we don't know each other personally, I feel like I sort of know you just because of geography. So,
well, of course, yeah.
I have to tell you too, as I was reading through each of your bios. Everybody else gave these wonderful, kind of very straightforward answers about how exciting it was to be tapped to sing into Contus and blah, blah. And then I get to yours and it's like, okay, I'm going to read your whole bio. And this was before I knew that I would actually be interviewing you, because I loved your sense of humor that you gave in the answers. And I'm just kind of wondering, Chris, is it a Midwest thing? Is it a Chris Foss thing? Or is it kind of a combination?
Well, geez, I don't know. I mean, I've been in the group, 9 years, and I think some of the questions that sort of we answer, we answer new questions every year, but so this is like kind of my ninth time of answering the question. So,
okay.
Trying to come up with different answers every year is always an opportunity for, it's kind of a challenge, right?
For some creative thinking out of the box.
Yeah, I think so.
Well, you get an A++ for that.
Oh, yeah. Well, thank you.
I loved it. And it, actually, I'm going to refer to some of it in some of the questions. But going
sure.
back to, looking up at Contus, I didn't realize this is really one of only two professional classical male vocal ensembles here in the United States. The other one being, of course, Chanticleer, that actually pays its artists full-time salaries while maintaining this year-round schedule of performances. But you are different from Chanticleer, I'm guessing, in that you are artist-led. Is that a correct statement?
Yeah, that's exactly right. We are artist-led. We don't have one single artistic director. Actually, we operate in the chamber music model, in that we all are sort of equal artistic directors. All eight of us, every member of the ensemble is 1/8 of the artistic director. Sort of, if you can imagine like how a string quartet, they don't have someone up there flapping their arms around telling everybody what to do. They all sort of, they're all great at their own instrument, and they all collaborate and make those musical decisions together. And those same principles apply for how we tend to do things. We just, we have twice as many people, and we don't have any instruments.
Except your voices, which, with seven other members, you're sort of working. I mean, this is extremely a collaborative effort, because not only are you performing your part, but you're having to listen and constantly retune with the other seven members around you, kind of being in tune, I suppose, to them too, with the energy that they're drawing on the audience or what might be going on with them. I mean, this affects a small group ensemble like this.
Right. Yeah. There is kind of a large learning curve. And as we've figured out over the years, there's not exactly a perfect collegiate training program for this, because either you train as a solo operatic singer and in the hopes of, you know, becoming a solo operatic singer, or you train as a music educator, or you train as a choral singer. But there's really not a program out there that trains people to be independent musicians that also sing with other people at the same time. And so there's a really large learning curve. And luckily enough, we have continually, time and time again, hired very smart people and really great musicians with really well-rounded musical brains at the same time as hiring really nice instruments as well, vocal instruments, voices.
Yeah, and you guys have diverse backgrounds in that sense. So I'm wondering, too, as each of you is considered sort of an artistic director in your own right, do you all then play an equal role in sort of determining what your programming will be?
We do. We actually, we facilitate the process all together, so we all participate equally. Number one, a couple of years in advance, we decide what the program is going to be about, and not necessarily the subject matter, but the story that we're trying to tell. Most of the time, we try to put it in terms of a narrative or a journey, rather than just sort of, here's something that it's about, and here are some things about that thing, sort of categories and things like that. So we always really try to tell a story. We all decide which story to tell together. Once we arrive on that story that we all agree upon, then we all sort of go into our separate corners independently and find pieces that we think individually could help tell one small part of that story. So if my experience is in, plain chant or something, I will come with a piece that's, almost 1,000 years old, or 900 years old or something like that. And then, one of my other colleagues will come back with, a Dave Matthews song or a Beyonce song that was written, 5 years ago or something like that. And what's really remarkable about that is not only do you get to discover really excellent music that you're not sort of, it's not a part of your personal experience. So you get not only exposed to more really great things, but you get closer to the universality of a concept if something was true 1,000 years ago halfway across the world, as it is true 5 years ago here in America, then it becomes a much more universal message if both of those songs have a common ground. And that's something that I think is really valuable about the way we work and the way we program.
Oh, I could not agree more. And I think that's one of the great things about Contus is the innovative programming that you guys always put together, in that you are telling this musical story and you reach out and grab music from all around the world and all across the ages. And that's a way that we all find common ground together as human beings. These are universal truths that are told with music and song.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. That's exactly how we feel.
Well, and I noticed one of the questions on there was getting to composers specifically, since you brought up plain chant. I noticed that you mentioned if you could commission any composer to write for Contus, and you picked Hildegard von Bingen, which I totally dug that answer. I'm fascinated with the music of Hildegard von Bingen.
Of course,
and,
yeah.
Again, there's people that write music that speak to the time in which we're living. But then there are people that truly write music that I think is almost not of this world. It's music that is so far ahead of its time that people in that time sometimes either don't fully appreciate it or aren't quite sure what to do about it. And I think Hildegard von Bingen was one of those. And the fact that she was a woman, at that time, women didn't really have positions of power. They certainly didn't write music on their own. But because she was an abbess, she could do all of these things. But her gifts were clearly almost otherworldly. And it puts me in mind of a composer I was thinking of for you guys would be Gesualdo. If you were asking me that question, saying who would you commission, composer from age past, to write for Contus, Gesualdo is who popped into my mind, just for the same reason.
Of course. Well, yeah, and we, trust me, we've looked, and we always try and find excuses to sing Gesualdo, but
really?
He didn't write that much for men's voices. So
yeah.
It's a little difficult.
And sometimes his narratives are not quite the story you want to tell.
Sure, yeah. Well,
he wasn't the happiest dude. That's for
of
sure.
Of course. Well, and you know, it's funny that you bring that up. I forgot that I chose Hildegard in that question. About a couple of months ago, my wife and I adopted a dog, and we actually ended up naming her Hildegard. So.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Well, you know, what you're speaking to of music that, you know, survives across the ages like that, you know, hers would definitely be a shining example of something like that. Again, not only because it was music written in her time as she understood it, but it's music that has survived the test of time. And
of course,
it sounds like that's the kind of thing that eight of you bring to the table each and every time is what are these pieces, either from ages past or that is much more contemporary, that is going to speak to the story that we're going to tell this time.
Exactly. Yeah, I think we're absolutely committed to what the piece is about and what the contextualized, the context of the piece sort of refers to and you know, how it existed in its time that relates to the message that we're trying to tell and the story that we're trying to tell. Exactly.
So we're going to get to this concert that you will be performing here in Dubuque in a very short time. But first, I kind of wanted to ask you on a more serious note. I noticed that you got your Master's of Music around the University of Nebraska. Is that correct?
Uh-huh. University of Nebraska-Lincoln.
Yeah. And then you actually taught there for a while and directed a choral ensemble there. So I'm guessing that singing was sort of always part of your life?
Yeah. I mean, it was definitely a common staple in my house when I was growing up. And when we would get together with sort of extended family, there was usually singing at an extended family gathering. And my parents were both not singers by vocation, but singers by sort of, you know, by core value of what they believed in. And, mm-hmm. What they did on a regular basis, and so it was very easy to pass on. You know, I started singing in elementary school in choir, and just kept going from there. Yeah.
So you had a really solid background in singing, but I noticed that you got your bachelor's in commercial music. So what was that? Were you thinking for a time that you might go in a little bit different direction?
Well, you know, it's interesting. I get asked that question a lot. What is commercial music? What does that mean? And the program is really set up more for contemporary music, and that's probably a little bit more accurate description. So jazz, pop, folk, recording studio techniques and things like that. And it just seemed like a very interesting thing to me at the time. I certainly took lots of, studied a lot about Western music history and ethnomusicology around the world and everything, and Millikan gave me a really strong background in all those things. But you know, I was also interested in you know, what people were writing, have written in the last 50 years.
Yeah, and you certainly performed in a lot of groups in and around Nebraska, too, while you were at the University of Nebraska. So I'm thinking, when you got this call from Contus, was that sort of like the answer to a dream that you'd had to perform with a group and get paid for it and travel to all these different locations and do what you love to do, which is singing the world's most beautiful music?
Well, I would say, you know, life for any musician is pretty rough. As a gigging musician, the exciting parts about it are that you get to do so many different things, different styles of music. I had sung with a bunch of groups before I actually joined Contus, and it was great because you get a lot of different experiences. Now, the drawback to that is that it's a less stable, both financially and sort of also you have to be a little bit more nimble and on your toes. The reason why Contus is such a unique and just really great experience for singers and artists especially is that it is a full-time job and you have benefits. It takes that sort of, that constant hustle out of being an artist, which is not necessarily a bad thing, but I think it also frees you up to be a lot more comfortable and take a lot more risks, artistically with what you're able to do. I think if you're a freelance gigging musician, you are beholden to whoever is paying your fee. But I think here at Contus, we have a really exciting opportunity to take a lot more risks because we have a lot more stability.
So there's a lot to be said for not being the starving artist that's living on the edge and getting their creativity from there.
Sure. I mean, we sacrifice a little bit of street cred, but I think I can be okay with that.
You live with that, yeah.
Right, yes. I don't know that you could say that we've pulled out for sure.
Well, it says one of the places that you would like to have performed was Antarctica, because you haven't been there.
So wouldn't that be cool?
Wouldn't it? Well, it made me think of the Piano Guys. They do those awesome videos, you know, playing on top of a speeding train or the Great Wall of China. And right away, I had this great vision of Contus down there, you know, in this circle of penguins, you know, just totally rocking out to you guys singing. So,
well, you know, a while ago, that brings to mind, we did a residency with Minnesota Public Radio, and they had sonic architecture. They had put together this thing called sonic architecture, where we would go and sing pieces and do an improv piece in different sort of unexpected sonic environments and acoustic environments. There was an art museum in the Twin Cities where we sort of sang inside the sculpture. There was a very famous bridge in the Twin Cities where we sang under the bridge, and like some kayakers would go by. Another very cool thing that they had us do, we went to a cave in St. Paul, and then there's all the way up north in Minnesota, sort of around Ely, sort of around the Boundary Waters canoe area, wilderness area. There's a mine called Sudan Mine, and down at a half mile underground, there's a very old, I think it's an iron mine, and the other half of it is actually turned into, I think there's not a particle accelerator, but something that catches neutrinos. It's a physics lab. But they took us down there and a half mile underground and recorded us singing in this mine, and that was such a cool thing. I'll never do anything like that again, and it was such a neat experience.
Wow, and acoustically it came off. It was probably kind of an eerie but yet very moving experience.
Yeah, well, I mean, so much of what we do as acoustic musicians, you know, very rarely do we sing into microphones. Mostly, you know, we just, so much of how we sound has to do with the room and the acoustics of the room that we're singing in. So the experience of singing in something other than a concert hall or other than a church, other than an auditorium, is very, very much shapes the music and how you perceive it.
That is really awesome. I'm not even sure. I know the Ely area pretty well. We've been along the Echo Trail and then always end up winding our way up to Grand Marais to watch fireworks, usually on the 4th. So now I'm going to have to go check out that mine.
I think if memory serves, if they might still be up on the internet if you Google Contus Sonic Architecture or Contus NPR Residency or something like that.
Okay, well, I am going to check that out, because I always watch performers too and listen to some of their concerts, usually pulling it up on YouTube or something to kind of get a sense if I have never seen them before. And again, what really strikes me is, forgive the expression, but how in tune you eight singers are with one another. It's just like you're kind of in your own world again, doing your own musical expression and singing your heart out. But it seems like no matter how much you're into the music, at some point you can tell that you are all extremely aware of what the others are doing at that moment. So again, acoustically, you are all in tune.
Well, and in tune is such an interesting, you know, when you're talking about the human body and the human voice, in tune is such an interesting word, because everyone's voice is entirely different, and so that's one of the biggest challenges is trying to become as the same as possible while still retaining your individual character, your individual sound, what you do the best. And so that's always, you know, where we try to toe the line between those two things. It's always, you're always being pulled in one direction or the other. And especially with the human voice and the human body, it's impossible to be perfectly in tune with another person. So it becomes about something more than that. It's sort of the journey towards being in tune is a little bit more important than, you know, instrumental perfection or scientific perfection. It becomes a little bit more, esoteric is probably the wrong word. It has terrible connotations.
Well, it's like the sum is greater than the parts. And yeah. I love that. You were totally going in that direction, I think. And I love that whole analogy.
That happens that when people are singing together, that even though it's not scientifically perfect, there it's larger or bigger or rounder in some way.
Yeah, and it creates something new and wonderful, as opposed to one beautiful voice singing alone. Here you have eight of them. This is Mindy Heisel, and having a great opportunity to have a chat with one of the bass members of the vocal group Cantus. We're talking today with Chris Foss. You have a concert coming up that many of us here are going to get an opportunity to go hear you, so we do want to talk about that. I do have one more question, though, a little off track. Sure. Again, kind of going back to Chanticleer, since you guys are kind of similar in that measure, I had an opportunity to speak with Matthew from Chanticleer a couple of years ago now, and we were talking about how Franz Biebel's Ave Maria sort of became their signature piece, and they introduced that at one of their concerts, and of course it took off, and now Franz Biebel is known the world over for the Ave Maria. He wrote a lot of other pieces, but you ask anyone, what did Biebel write? It's Ave Maria. So it's kind of their signature piece. They use it in every one of their concerts. Does Cantus have a signature piece, or are you still kind of looking for one?
Well, you know, funnily enough, I would say it's probably the same piece. The group started about 22 years ago, and it was three as students in college, and there were three cello players, and it was four students originally, and there three of them are cello players, which is why they decided on the string quartet chamber music sort of model. Their first recital that they sort of signed up and wanted to sing, the piece that they wanted to sing for the recital was the Franz Biebel Ave Maria, which has seven parts. So then they asked three other people to join them, and then it sort of grew from there. And that was really the genesis of how it all started. And it's certainly, you know, Chanticleer's piece, of course. I mean, even the edition that everyone buys across the country, it says the Chanticleer Choral Series or something like that on the front. But we actually, one of our former singers a couple of years ago joined Chanticleer, and it turns out we were in the same city at the same time. And we went to their show, and then we all hung out afterwards, and we said, hey, we should sing something together. What is the piece that we all know? It's absolutely the Franz Biebel Ave Maria. So, and I think there's a video on Facebook somewhere of Chanticleer and Cantus all singing the Biebel Ave Maria, and it sort of went viral, and so many people watched it. We had them out to the Twin Cities. We had Chanticleer out to the Twin Cities for a joint concert in October this year, this previous year.
Oh, that is so amazing. Well, it's what I noticed, that many of the former members of Cantus, too, have gone on to other choral groups or are working professionally or on stage or have operatic careers. So clearly this is a nice place to sort of go off in other directions or allow yourself some other projects when you're not, you know, what, doing 70, 80 tours a year. You guys are busy.
Right. It's true.
So we do want to talk about this concert coming up, because you're talking about Cantus and the musical narratives. And in this one, you're clearly, I mean, telling a story. No greater love than this. And I'll just let you sort of talk about this, Chris.
Sure, of course. No greater love than this. The title of the show comes from a quote from the Bible. No man hath greater love than this, than to lay down his life for that of his friends. So the whole show is talking about the experience through the eyes of a soldier. What happens when the soldier signs up for war? What happens when they discover, makes new friendships with the brothers that they meet? What happens when they trust someone with their life? What happens when they suffer losses of those dear friends? What happens when they make sacrifices and they put themselves in between harm's way and those that they love? So it's really about telling those stories of soldiers, and we actually have a couple of quotes and letters throughout the show that we'll read that really speak to the experience that soldiers have when they sign up and when they experience war. And even, actually, we have a couple of pieces in the second half where the text was written by American, there's three pieces where the texts were all written by American soldiers who have seen combat, and they're really amazingly powerful pieces.
Yeah, that's what really struck me about this, is that this is a very powerful concert, in that you're not only singing, but you're also going to actually, not just singing the narrative, but you're going to also be reading and doing some spoken narrative in the concert as well.
Right. Yeah. That's something that we always believe helps sort of guides the story along and the narrative and the journey.
Why was this particular show a sense of mission for you personally?
For myself personally, I know that everyone in the group has a lot of respect for veterans and people who make this sacrifice, this very brave sacrifice. So I would say as a group, it's mostly out of respect and at least also out of acknowledgement that this is a part of our culture, a part of who we are as a people. Personally, I know other people, other members of the group have family members that have served. My brother served in two branches of the military. And both of my grandfathers fought in the two separate theaters of World War II. So from a personal standpoint, it's definitely telling the story and honoring the sacrifices that they made.
And this is an amazing repertoire that you've put together for this concert. I mean, you've got works by Cohan, and then you go all the way up to music by John Lennon and Jeff Beal, who I adore. He's written music for House of Cards, for the HBO series Rome, which was the first time that I ever heard music of Jeff Beal and fell in love with it immediately. So you've got favorites by Dvorak. You've got Bob Chilcutt. I mean, this is huge.
Well, yeah, thank you very much. We are really excited about this program. We feel everything fits together really well. That piece, Jeff Beal, you were mentioning, the composer Jeff Beal, we're just so unbelievable. We actually commissioned a piece from him. We're so unbelievably floored by what happened and how it came about. He chose this text. He had been recently scoring for, a documentary on PTSD. So he was already sort of familiar with that subject. There's a collection of poems of poetry that was sort of collected and written down by John Borland, who was a prisoner of war in Vietnam for, I think, six and a half years, somewhere around there. They weren't allowed to talk to each other, and they were kept in individual cells. So the only method of communication that they had with each other was by tapping to each other on the wall. They invented their own, it wasn't Morse code, they invented their own code of tapping on the wall to each other. And eventually they got so good at it, they started writing poetry by tapping on the walls. And so the poem that Jeff set, it's really haunting and beautiful. It's one of these poems that was written by tapping on the wall while people were a prisoner of war in Vietnam. And it's about that experience of being a prisoner of war. It's really powerful. It's called Beneath Thin Blanket.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear that one. That just gives you cold chills when you're describing it. Wow. And, of course, you've got favorites like Over There by Cohan. And I noticed you had William Billings, I think, was on there maybe, unless I read that wrong.
No, we've done some Billings in the past, and he's certainly a great composer, but we don't have any Billings on this show, unfortunately.
Not on this one, but you got Dvorak's Going Home, which, how perfect is that? I mean, again, this is just such an extremely imaginative, and I think it is going to be a profoundly moving program. John Lennon's Imagine, you've got at the end of the list here. Ron Jeffers, Working for the Dawn of Peace. I'm not familiar with Ron Jeffers.
It's actually he has an arrangement of two old Civil War songs together. One is Two Brothers on Their Way, One More Blue and One More Gray, and then the second part is Tenth Tonight. Everyone's sort of working together to create peace, and it's a really remarkable juxtaposition of the fact that talking about two brothers who were fighting on opposite sides of the Civil War, and the fact that that's a part of our country's history. That it's very easy to forget about these days. And I think we need to be reminded of the fact that, maybe 150, 160, 70 years ago, Americans were fighting against each other and killing each other. And brothers were fighting against brothers and neighbors were fighting against neighbors.
Yeah, it certainly resonates powerfully now, there's no doubt about it. And again, you're talking about music that isn't just reflective of the American soldier's history, but of any soldier's history. You've got pieces by Janacek describing what it's like to be in the army, over an ocean away in a whole other country. But obviously there are fundamental fears and joys and unexpressed and unarticulable feelings that men and women have when they choose to serve their countries in these ways. And could not be a more perfect title for this concert, I don't think, than No Greater Love Than This.
Well, thank you. You said it. You hit the nail on the head. I don't know that I have to add anything to that. That's perfect.
Well, you've got, again, just a nice list. I won't run through all of them because we do want there to be some surprises for everybody.
Of course. But I can guarantee that if the audience enjoys it enough, there'll be a surprise at the end.
Oh, I can't imagine that they won't, Chris. Again, looking at the list here, I'm just amazed at how innovative and imaginatively you've woven together this musical narrative of pieces that I think are going to speak to everyone, from people who go to concerts regularly and maybe know a lot about choral music or classical music or pop music, to people who maybe don't go to concerts very often. And this is going to speak to everybody, which is, I think, one of the best things you can hope for in concerts like this, is to set a big table and invite everyone to come in and sit down and listen.
Well, that's certainly our hope and our goal and one of our core values that we continue to strive for.
Well, and you do a lot of educational outreach. You mentioned you were doing some today. And how important is that to Cantus's mission?
Well, I think it's central to just about anyone. We try as hard as we can not to take the position that we have for granted. It could have been any people who are in this group, but I think it's a part of the station that sort of we've been given, that we have been granted, that we need to pass on a little bit of that knowledge and share that with as many people as we can. I also think it's a part of our duty to continue to create a part of our culture, as not only as artists but also as choral music educators. It's very much a part of our, not only our duty but our passion, to help share, you know, certainly the technical aspects of the job, but the true love of choral music and what it can actually do for people, not only artistically but just in a sense of the act of singing in a choir and singing together with other people is something that is completely unique, and there's absolutely no way to duplicate it, and it's something that everyone can do. So we believe that it is vital to the human experience.
Well, Chris, I thank you so much for taking some time to speak with me here this afternoon. I know you guys are getting ready to do a show, and so I don't want to take up too much of your time, but this has been a real treat for me. I can't thank you enough.
Well, of course, and thank you so much. This is so great. Thank you, and we're so looking forward to our time in Dubuque.
Yeah, you're going to be coming to Dubuque on February 17th. It's a Friday. They'll be live at the Heritage Center. 7:30 p.m. is when the concert starts. And I'll be telling folks about how to get their tickets. They're on sale right now. So you can go to dbq.edu/heritagecenter and get your tickets. You'll be able to see Chris Foss along with the other seven members of Cantus, watch them perform on stage, and hear this excellent repertoire that they've put together for No Greater Love Than This. I think this is going to be, again, just one of those absolutely mesmerizing concert experiences that I'm just going to go out there and say, I think it's going to be life-changing. I don't think people will feel the same way about anything when they walk out of that concert.
Oh, thank you. That's such high praise. That's just so, thank you so much.
Well, thank you for coming, Chris, and thank you for, again, your time today. This was Chris Foss, one of the basses in the choral group Cantus.